right. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable Supreme Court of Ohio is now in open session pursuant to adjournment. Master Commissioner Ryan O'Rourke presiding.
Please be seated. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning.
We have three cases to be heard today. The first one is case number 2015-1861, Board of Education of Hilliard City Schools et al. Versus Franklin County Board of Revision. For the appellant representing UTSI Finance Incorporated, Ms. Lutz.
May it please the court. My name is Heather Lutz, and I'm counsel for the appellant, the property owner in this case. Here, the BTA entered an unreasonable, unlawful decision and abused its discretion when it ignored the deed that was filed into evidence in this case. The deed here, on its face, was signed and notarized in 2002. Because the sale occurred in 2002 when the deed was signed and notarized, it's not recent to the January 1st, 2011 tax lien date at issue in this case. Because the sale was not recent to the tax lien date, it was appropriate and correct for the Board of Revision to rely on the appraisal evidence presented by the property owner at the Board of Revision. Alternatively, the Board of Education and the BTA would have you believe that the date the deed was recorded in 2009, and which was when the conveyance fee statement was filed, would be the correct date to use.
Well, doesn't HIN say to do that?
HIN is distinguishable from this case, Your Honor. HIN dealt with a situation where there were two separate sales, both close in time, recent to the tax lien date at issue. And the court was trying to determine between those two sales which was closer in time to the tax lien date. So in trying to determine which was closer, the court determined that the appropriate date to use was when the conveyance fee statement was filed. Here, we don't have two separate sales. We only have one sale. In addition to that, HIN clearly did not contemplate a six-year delay between signing and notarizing the deed and actually recording it in 2009.
Well, you could have 100 sales. I mean, we have to have some sort of principle to determine what the effective date of a sale is for tax purposes. So whether there's one sale, I mean, I feel like that's sort of a, I don't know, I might read HIN a different way.
I understand what you're saying, Your Honor, but here we have a 6+ year delay between the time that the deed was signed and notarized and when it was actually recorded. Clearly not a situation that HIN was contemplating. Here, what you have is different than HIN and some of the other cases the court has determined where the recording date of the conveyance fee made sense. It occurred close in time to when the sale actually occurred. Here, the sale occurred in 2002. It's not recent to the 2011 tax lien date. So alternatively, the Board of Education and BTA would have you believe that that 2009 date was the appropriate date. If you use that date, then the only logical conclusion from that is that the parties weren't engaging in an arm's length transaction, that they were related parties. Ordinarily, in most of the cases that come before this court, what you see are transactions between unrelated parties where the purchaser is eager to put the world on notice that that purchase occurred. So the timing of filing the conveyance fee statement and recording the deed occurs close in time to when the sale happened. Here, the fact that there's more than 6 years between the time the deed was signed and notarized and when it was recorded means that the only logical conclusion is that it was between related parties who didn't care to put the world on notice that this transaction had occurred.
That's kind of a speculative argument, is it? I mean, we have no idea, really, do we? Why they took so long?
There's nothing in the record about why they took so long, except the things that are on the face of the deed. The court doesn't need to look any further than the face of the deed, which on its face was signed and notarized in 2002, but not filed in 2009.
Let's say the court finds that HIN controls 2009 March when it was filed is the effective date of the sale for tax purposes. What's the outcome?
The outcome here still would be that the appraisal evidence was appropriately considered because our appraiser the appraiser testimony and the report that was presented to the Board of Revision did testify about market changes that occurred between 2009 and the January 1st, 2011 tax lien date. The BTA, I know, said that there wasn't such evidence, but that was just clearly an error. They ignored that evidence that was in the record.
So did they abuse their discretion?
They abused their discretion, and it was an unlawful, unreasonable decision. The appraisal evidence, the report, indicated both in the sales comparison approach and in the income capitalization approach changes between the 2009 conveyance date and the 2011 tax lien date. I'll reserve the remaining of my time.
Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, I'm Kim Allison with Rich and Gillis Law Group, and I'm here this morning on behalf of the Board of Education of the Hilliard City School District. Despite having three separate opportunities, the property owner in this case elected not to submit any competent probative evidence relating to the arm's length nature or recency of the March 5th, 2009 sale of the subject property. The property owner elected not to produce any witness with personal knowledge of the sale. The property owner elected not to submit the purchase contract, closing statements, or any other documents which would set forth the terms of the sale. Rather, the property owner decided to rely exclusively on the hearsay testimony of its appraiser and the appraisal report. In this case, the BTA correctly found that Ms. Freed's testimony relating to the arm's length nature of the 2009 sale was inadmissible hearsay. Ms. Freed's testimony was based upon out-of-court statements made to her by an unidentified owner.
What's your response to UTSI's argument that this is just the nature of the business? Appraisers, in order to do their job, need to look at all sorts of things to prepare. I mean, they need to talk to other people that in their comparable sales.
Sure. And in our opinion, there's a difference between relying on representations made by others in order to support the value conclusion versus submitting those statements for the truth of the matter asserted. In this case, Ms. Freed testified that someone told her the sale was between related parties for that very, very fact. It was not to support her value conclusion. It was the classic definition of hearsay. It was based on an out-of-court statement offered for the truth of the matter asserted.
So what if we had a collection of data showing capitalization rates across the country, and that's included in an appraisal report? Is that tossed out for hearsay?
No, it's absolutely not. The appraiser, first of all, there's an exception to the hearsay rule for appraiser opinion testimony, where they can rely upon facts and data perceived by them or facts admitted into the record. So their analysis of, the capitalization rate would fall into that category. They're not saying that they're not trying to prove that the cap rate was what it was. They are relying on that information to form an ultimate opinion of value. So in our opinion, that's completely different. Also, it's important to note that an appraiser's area of expertise would be the market trends, the capitalization rates. It is not within an appraiser's area of expertise to determine whether or not a sale was arm's length. That's a legal conclusion. Courts have specifically held that the type of testimony submitted by Ms. Freed was an admissible hearsay. Specifically in the Almond Tree case, the 10th District Court of Appeals held that the appraiser's testimony relating to the arm's length nature of the sale was inadmissible because it was based on the underlying data not included in the record. Instead, the appraiser in that case considered the out-of-court statements made to him by the employees of the property owner and a review of the sale documents, which were not submitted. The court in Almond Tree specifically held that the entire testimony of the appraiser relating to the key issue of whether the sale was arm's length was based upon the rankest form of hearsay.
Let me pitch a hypothetical to you.
Sure.
Let's assume that the court concludes that the BTA erred in its hearsay determination. So perhaps we apply some sort of a harmless error review. Do Mrs. Freed's statements establish a related party transaction, even if we accept them at face value?
I guess, I find it hard to accept them at face value because we don't even know who made those statements. I mean, they were made to her by an owner. UTSI is a publicly traded company, so we don't even know if the statements were made by someone with personal knowledge. But if the parties were in fact related, I mean, that's the key issue of the case. I don't know how you can use hearsay testimony to establish that. All they had to do was present someone with personal knowledge of the sale or the sale documents, maybe. And they elected not to do that. Did that answer your question?
I know there was some talk about the majority owner of UTSI also owns Lakeshore Ventures. That's what Ms. Freed said. If the court can consider that, is that sufficient to show that the sale was between related parties? Because we have, the way that I'm looking at this, we have Lakeshore to Universal Truckload Services, which is the sale, that's where all the action is. And then we have a later one, Universal Truckload Services to UTSI. But there just seems to be a gap in the two transactions. I mean, it doesn't say anything about whether Universal Truckload Services and Lakeshore Ventures were related.
Right, exactly. And I think, I mean, obviously, it's the property owner's burden to produce evidence that they were, in fact, related. And the fact that there was one owner who may have had some common ownership interest in both publicly traded companies does not prove that they were acting in a manner that is atypical of the market. So really, there's no impact that had any impact on the sale price at all. I mean, without testimony from someone with personal knowledge of the sale, we're forced to draw a lot of inferences, and we just don't know.
What's your response to the changed market conditions argument from UTSI?
We don't believe that Ms. Freed submitted any evidence to support that. If you listen to the testimony at the Board of Revision, Ms. Freed testified specifically that there were general macroeconomic changes between 2008 and 2011. There's absolutely no evidence to prove a change between the sale date of March 2009 and January 1st, 2011. Both of those things happened after the decline in the market in 2008. In fact, if you look specifically at Ms. Freed's report at the CorpAz study that she relied upon, and I forget the exact numbers, but the national cap rate, if you give me just a second, the national cap rate at the end of the first quarter of 2009 was 7.75%, and the national cap rate at the beginning of the first quarter of 2011 was 7.8%. So that data actually shows that there was no significant change in the market. So basically, it's our opinion that the property owners failed to prove that the sale was remote or included items of other than real property. Finally, we need to address for the first time, the property owner is now asking this court to take judicial notice of facts that were not submitted below and documents that were not submitted below. Since specifically, they're arguing that Mr. Brown caused the parties to be related because he was on the chair of the board of the seller and had an ownership interest in the buyer. However, prior to submitting its reply brief to this court, this fact was never argued either before the BOR or the BTA, and therefore it has been effectively waived.
Well, they've always argued that it's been a related party transaction, right? I mean,
you're right, Your Honor. They have. I mean, but they haven't specifically said why. I mean, Mr. Maroon, there was no evidence. We've had no ability to cross-examine Mr. Maroon, no ability to request documents and investigate his relationship in the sale at all. I mean, to do it at this late nature, I mean, the Board of Tax Appeals and the Board of Revision are the triers of fact. To submit new facts before this court violates the fundamental appellate rule that the appellate court's not supposed to consider facts that weren't considered by the BOR or BTA.
Right. I mean, I think in your motion to strike, you argued that the principles of waiver and there's perhaps no jurisdiction. I mean, isn't it, the argument has always been suppressed. It's just they're trying to bring in new evidence to substantiate that argument. I mean, isn't that the better way to understand this?
It is, although the argument, I would argue, is more specific just because it mentions a specific person and their exact involvement. I mean, we could argue that, you know, the value of the property isn't $2 million, but that doesn't encompass every argument that we would ever want to make to establish that fact.
So are you withdrawing your waiver and your jurisdictional arguments?
No, we think it still applies.
Okay.
I mean, I think they both apply. I just think one may be stronger than the other. Okay. Finally, just in order to address the Hinn argument, we think that case is obviously directly on point. The court didn't differentiate the fact that there were two sales. They specifically held that the date a conveyance fee statement is filed is the date of sale for purposes of determining value under Revised Code 5713.03. It's directly on point on this case. And the date the deed was signed and notarized is irrelevant. I know that counsel asked you to draw some inferences based upon the fact that the deed was signed 5 years before it was filed, before the conveyance fee statement was filed. But again, we have no evidence in the record to establish why that occurred. That was their burden to prove, which they easily could have done. So drawing inferences would be inappropriate at this time. Do you have no further questions?
I have no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's simply not correct that Hinn did not differentiate between the two sales. In its conclusion to that opinion, the court said, in determining which sale occurred in closer proximity in time to the tax lien date, the auditor should use the date the real property conveyance fee statement is filed in the auditor's office as the sale date of the property. Regarding the hearsay testimony of the appraiser, it would be our position that the Board of Education objected only to a small portion, it's about two sentences in Ms. Freed's appraisal, not to the entirety of her appraisal. Because of course, as you mentioned, appraisers must rely on hearsay evidence. In fact, all of her sales comparable data, all of the data for the income capitalization approach, all of that information is hearsay data. It's not information that she personally has knowledge of.
I understand. I think they're drawing a distinction about when someone is talking about the property at issue and whether it's arm's length, it's incumbent upon the property owner to bring in someone with knowledge about details of how the sale went down. And I think Almond Tree speaks to that. So what would your response be to that?
So Ms. Freed testified about the fact that she had been discussing with the owner that it was between related parties, and that was the basis for saying that she did not consider the sale in her comparable sales. So it's not that the owner is putting that forward for the truth of the matter asserted. It's a basis for why that sale was not considered in Ms. Freed's sales comparable comparison. So here, again, as I mentioned before, the court need not look no further than the face of the deed itself, which was signed and notarized in 2002, but not recorded until 2009. The BTA and the BOE would have it both ways, that it was both recent and an arm's length transaction. And it can't be both of those things. Either it was a recent sale in 2009, and the only explanation for the 6+ year gap between the signing and notarization and the recording date in 2009 is it's between related parties, or the sale actually occurred between unrelated parties in 2002, which means it's not a recent sale. Under either circumstance, it was appropriate for the Board of Revision to look at the appraisal evidence that the property owner filed. It's not the burden of the property owner to put forth specific evidence. Just because the Board of Education would like there to have been additional evidence presented regarding the sale, again, we don't have an obligation to come forward with specific information such as a purchase agreement. We didn't need to present anything other than the deed, which on its face says it was signed and notarized in 2002. The Board of Education's position that Ms. Freed's statement that there were market changes between 2008 and 2011 doesn't somehow encompass 2009 to 2011 doesn't make any sense. Of course, 2008 to 2011 encompasses the market changes between 2009 to 2011.
Well, what if it was just following the market? I mean, is that really evidence of a change if the market, if everybody's sort of heading up or heading down and you're situated within that band of time, you might just be following the market changes.
So Ms. Fried, in her report and in her testimony, noted that she adjusted her sales comparable data for market conditions, and she had 2010 and 2012 sales that she adjusted for changes in market conditions. In addition, as the appellee noted, she has information in the income capitalization approach about changes in the capitalization rate. Now, yes, what she noted is that there was a slight change between 2009 and 2011. What she didn't notate is that it actually looks like a giant bell curve if you look at that graph. So there were significant market changes between 2009 and 2011, which Ms. Fried testified to and which the BTA unreasonably ignored and abused its discretion in ignoring that. So for those reasons, the property owner would request that the court vacate the decision of the BTA and reinstate the Board of Revision's determination that the value of the property from January 1st, 2011 to 2013 was $1.47 million based on the appraisal evidence presented by the property owner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, the case will be submitted and you'll be advised of our decision.